Denham Brown for three. No good. By George, the dream is alive.
More April content. And it's because things are happening. You know, it's late April. We've already signed. We brought in a guy. You know, everyone knew that we were kind of targeting some recruits this offseason. Petey, let us know, who'd we pick up, and what's he going to do for our squad?
Jamal Hartwell, point guard out of Fairfax, California. Looks like an awesome player. He looks to me like an Otis clone when I watch tape of him. He shoots really well, a little bit undersized, but he's clearly a pass-first point guard who can also, again, he shoots well. He gets to the rim. He looks really well-rounded. It's exciting to think that he's going to be Otis's understudy this year, most likely. He's going to be a backup, probably get limited minutes off the bench. But then he's going to get the keys to the car in his sophomore year. So big commitment for the staff here.
And one thing we saw this past season is they did kind of work in Otis as a shooting guard. They had Kyer bring the ball up some. Mm-hmm. And I think that's because, you know, running Otis off screens, he's probably our best three-point shooter at times. So you do kind of want to get him some plays off ball. And I think just having a point guard that you could at least rely on handling the rock kind of helps with that. You know, I don't think we'll see too many minutes with them playing at the same time based on size and experience. But, you know, I think anything's on the table this year. What else have we learned? We learned that we have accepted an invite to a tournament.
The Emerald Coast Classic. Awesome tournament. Baylor, Cincinnati, and Ole Miss are already committed to it. So no matter how it shakes down, how the rest of the tournament fills out, it looks like it's going to be an opportunity for a quality winner too, which there are expectations for this team heading into the season. So you get a chance to pick up a win against a Baylor, maybe even a Cincinnati. You know, that's a resume booster.
And this is something that By George broke quite some time ago. It was probably the only thing that By George has ever broke. And now it's finally here. Got to say, I'm pretty excited about it. You know, only four teams, but a quality four teams in the tournament.
Is it four teams total?
Yeah, okay. I'm pretty sure it's four teams total. Yeah. And so, you know, we know that DP is still out there recruiting. We know that we have one open spot left, one open Scully spot. And so, you know, he's in his grind right now, trying to pull somebody. I know that you just said that we got eliminated by
Jamarius Burton. It's disappointing. He's a great player, but I think the writing was on the wall. If you follow him on Twitter, he was tweeting about, you know, how much he loved his visit to places like Butler and some other schools.
I saw Wichita State had like the ultimate snack variety pack waiting for him in his hotel room.
He wasn't quite as excited or as exuberant about his Mason recruiting experience. So I think it's not a total surprise, but still a little bit disappointing. He's narrowed it down to his final four, and he has eliminated Mason. I think he's between Temple, UMass, Butler, and Wichita State. So we lost that one still.
But we're trying. Like, that's the point that I think is so important, that we're going after talent.
We're trying to compete with the big guys, which is awesome, because you don't land players like that unless you try, right?
Right.
Like, we landed Gonar over some really steady competition. Same thing with Jason Douglas Stanley. So, you know, it's encouraging that the staff is trying to compete at that level in the recruiting game. And, you know, you're gonna lose more than you win, but ultimately that's the only way to bring in premier talent to the program.
And I think, I mean, if you're a Virginia University and you weren't going after Reuter, then, you know, what were you doing? So you got to imagine that we plucked him over some other schools as well. You got to believe that, you know, our recruiting, you know, is just only going to get better. We got plenty of guys that are constantly out and about. We have, you know, we're constantly seen at AAU tournaments and different places. Mm-hmm. You know, we're in the eye with all that.
And we're recruiting all over the country as well,
yeah,
which is really interesting. We got, you know, Hartwell's from California, Gonar's from Minnesota, Jair's from Michigan, Javon's from Georgia. You know, we've got
Calix, New York.
Calix, then Stanley are from New York. Yeah, Otis from New Jersey. So it doesn't seem like Paulson and the staff are confined to any geographical region, which is also pretty cool.
And I think, you know, we did snag a Jordan Miller from the area, but this area is just loaded with universities and talent. And so people are coming from all over the country to pluck from this area. So it's good to see us kind of get outside of the DMV, but also, you know, find a couple public school guys who maybe were under the radar who we can groom into the players we want them to be. But we got some exciting news. Up next, we got Dave Paulson. Petey Bucket set up an interview, got Dave Paulson on the podcast. Why don't you go ahead and preview that for our fans a little bit? This is probably the biggest interview we've ever got.
Dave Paulson made a little boy's dream come true today. He agreed to interview with us, which was just super cool. I think when I don't know about you, but when I started doing this, I didn't want to do anything more than just sort of write and BS about Mason basketball because it's something I enjoy spending my time on. But it's sort of taken off, and we're getting legit access, and we asked for an interview with Paulson, and he agreed to come on the podcast, which is just awesome. So
is DP making your dreams come true, or is By George making your dreams come true?
I think a little from column A, little from column B. But Dave was an awesome interview, which was, it was really cool to be able to pick his brain. What you're going to hear, there's a little bit of basketball nerdery up in the beginning. I asked him some questions about sort of how he makes end of game strategic decisions, because Mason was just so good in that area, which is the sort of thing, like, I'm a big nerd about that stuff. I could talk about it for hours.
And of course, you can follow him on Twitter, Petey Buckets.
At Petey Buckets. So I could talk about that sort of thing for hours. It was really nice for Dave to indulge us there and talk about that. And then we also got to next season and sort of the shape that the program's taking and what his expectations are. So give it a listen.
And we're still working on our our levels, our volume. We're still working with, equipment that I'm piecemealing together. So if you got to turn your dial up all the way to hear DP's answers, it's well worth it. Again, this is By George. You can follow us on Twitter at By George GMU. Hey, we're always looking for donations to improve our equipment. Here comes Paulson.
And welcome back to another episode of the By George podcast. I'm Pete Fallon, here with George Mason head basketball coach Dave Paulson. Dave, thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, it's great to be on.
So Dave's on Twitter. Your handle is at Paulson Dave. You do your own tweeting, is that right?
That is right. Yeah. Yep.
Unfiltered, direct from
the source. Unfiltered, direct from the source. Absolutely.
Great. You can find me on Twitter at PD Buckets. Before we get into next season, because I think that's what we want to talk about for the most part, I want to dig into something pretty particular related to last season, and that is that Mason was 10-1 in games decided by 5 points or less. And what I would like to dig in on is sort of what does the end of game decision making process look like for George Mason? How much of this is kept in your head? How much of this is on the assistants? If you're deciding, whether to foul, whether, you need to take a two or a three, who's making those decisions?
Well, I think, the most important thing is and we were, so that was great. I didn't even know that stat.
Yeah.
That's a good stat. If we had a good SID, he'd maybe be putting that out there, tweeting it out. But we won't go there. But, so sometimes you gotta be lucky. Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's be honest. Like,
right.
Ian Boyd at St. Joe and the ball's kicked, trapped and there's a scramble and you knocked out three. So like you can't separate luck from the equation to some degree. But one of the things that we do is we do something and we do it early in the practice. And we call it 5-on-4 rush, and it's transition defense, but we play like a game. It's a 4-minute game. We count twos and threes. We penalize guys for turnovers, offensive rebounds, surrendered, things like that. But then in that setting at the end, like we'll always have a scenario, And so, and sometimes the game will just play out, and it's a 2-point game. It's a 1-point game. You're down by six. Hey, we got to race the ball up. You don't want to take a jacked up three. You want to race the ball up, get an easy two. Teams won't foul. We're going to put on our press. We're going to foul. How do we foul? We'll be in a situation like for me, if we're up three and there's under 5 seconds to play, we want to foul,
mm-hmm.
So that our guys know that. You'll shoot a five. And then sometimes I'll just screw with the score. So, that free throw doesn't count. So you're only up two or you're up four. And it gives us a chance to then work on our end of game plays, whether it be length of the court, whether it be half court, whether it be, you know, do we have 6 seconds to go, things like that. And then, so, you know, you try to rehearse as much as you can. And then there's a lot of work, with my assistant coaches, like, talking about situations. Here's a good play. So the play that we beat St. Joe's on here, we call it triple. We've always had a home run play where you got to go length of the floor and you got, say, 2 seconds. So you got to get.
And you pulled that off twice this year.
Well,
or three times, actually. Well,
so we had a play home run. Mm-hmm. And, somebody said, have you ever won a buzzer beater? And when I was at Bucknell, we beat Richmond on a buzzer beater. We had 1.2 seconds and threw the length of floor, threw to our guy Muscala, hit a turnaround jumper. We won it at the end. So we won some on a home run play. But a good example, a year ago, we played Rhode Island home, and we're down, and we have 5 seconds to go, and we tried to run home run because it's what we're most familiar with, and the ball got stolen. Dane Fisher, one of my assistants, like, coach, we need to have we had a half court end of game play, we had a under out of bounds, but we got to have something if you got 3 to 6 seconds where you can take 3 dribbles. So we put triple in where, we could get the ball back into the inbound guy and have him race it up. And that was when Justin drove to and kicked it to Otis. And then we ran the same play against St. Joe the second time, and they trapped Otis, which we weren't prepared for, and the ball kicked loose. Sometimes you got to be lucky. Against UMass, we told them we're up 2. We wanted to get a stop, okay?
Right.
But guys, we said at the timeout when they ran the last play, guys, if they happen to score, we're not taking a timeout. Take it out, race it up. They're going to be celebrating, and Ian laid it in. But it's situational. At home against Cal State Northridge, which we were struggling the whole game, and we're down 2 and we needed a bucket. And Dwayne Simpkins said, let's get the ball to Gonar in the pitch post and have him fake the handoff. So, there's things we've practiced. There's things that I know what I'm going to do. But I'm very, very fortunate. I got a great staff. So, if we're in a situation where we have a timeout, it might be something that we hadn't necessarily
prepared. Great. So let's go back to fouling up 3, because I think that's a really interesting sort of debate in the college basketball circles. It seems like it's something that you believe in. Other coaches, for whatever reason, don't believe in it. I'm curious how you ended up there, how you got to that conclusion.
Well, this is great. And this tells you, like, coaching, sometimes you're going to be lucky. So I was a coach at Lemoyne College. So that was 21 years ago, 2021, whatever it was, my first year. And I had always, and this was before it was kind of in vogue to follow up 3. And I'm like, we're going to follow up 3. Like this, it was just starting to be, if we're up 3 and there's under 5 seconds. And I remember this. So we're playing East Stroudsburg University. We're up 3. There's 4 seconds to go. We foul. They make both free throws. We inbound the ball to our 92% foul shooter. He gets fouled. He misses the front end of the one-on-one. They get the rebound, take 2 dribbles, hit a shot from beyond half court, win. And we lose in a game that there's no way you can lose. So there's my philosophy. And I'm like, what am I going to do? So 2 weeks later, we're playing at Merrimack College. We're up 3. Their ball, they call timeout. Coach, we're going to foul. Hell no, we're not going to foul. And the guy banks in a 3 at the buzzer, and we lose in overtime. So in a span of 2 weeks, I'd lost playing both ways. So I'm like, wow, what do you do? And then I had a friend, actually the coach at DePaul University in Indiana, he wrote a whole article and he had a math guy, a statistical guru, the wins probability on each of these ways. And the evidence was pretty conclusive. You can lose either way. You can win either way. You can try to hunker down and not foul, and the guy miss and you hope he miss. But your percentages are higher. Okay, now things can go wrong. You can look what happened in my Des Moines days and miss a free throw and they hit one, or you can give up an offensive rebound.
So you think it's the percentage play then?
I think it's the better probability. It's a higher statistical likelihood that you'll win if you foul up three. And it's like the gray area is how much time. Because if it's 10, 12 seconds, that's too early to foul, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because then you got too many more possessions where you got to get the ball in bounds. You might turn it over. To me, it's like 5 seconds, and we're in that gray area. And we got to practice it. So we've done more of that. So hopefully you foul properly. So we have to tell the officials too, because we've tried to foul
and they don't call it.
So you gotta say, hey, we're gonna foul the first dribble after half court, and you gotta inform them as well.
Right. And is that something? Are you also worried about the downside of potentially fouling a guy who's shooting? Because I know in the
you gotta reach in on the ground, and you have to practice it. But you can never underestimate the ability of anyone, but certainly 18 to 22 year old males. Do stupid things when they're in a pressurized situation. So you can talk all the way, but you got to reach in for the ball. It's hard.
Yeah, and up three under 5 seconds left. It sounds like that's a hard and fast rule that's not going to vary on a game-by-game situation. That's just something Mason basketball is going to do going forward. Is that right?
I would say the vast, vast, vast majority of the time. Now, it could be a scenario, like this year we were a little thin up front. If you're in a situation where two guys have fouled out and you don't have big enough guys and you're getting manhandled on the glass, I would say 98% of the time it's going to happen. But there I could see a scenario where, I don't think we can get the defense a rebound given that we've only got five guards left or
whatever. Right.
But more often than not, I think you're going to see Mason foul up three under 5 seconds.
Yeah. Great. So I want to move on to sort of what we've been up to this off season and sort of the way that the program is being built. I think there's a sort of defined philosophy that's starting to emerge of how you're building the roster here. First is that you're really big on guys with state championships. I think over half the roster's got at least one state championship at this point. Guys like Gonar have four. You also talk a lot about culture and making sure that you're bringing the right guys into the team. And I want to get an idea of sort of what else do you think might come to define the way that the Mason program is built?
That's a great question. And I think, in my press conference, when I was hired, I talked about what Mason basketball player would look like, and that we want to establish a brand, an identity. And we want to be able to, a high school coach, an AU coach, a scout, a talent evaluator, that's a Mason guy. I got to call Paulson or I got to call the assistants, that guy fits for them. Or, and that takes time. It takes time to build our credibility with high school AAU coaches, talent evaluators, our staff being out there. And I think that's starting to happen. It was interesting, this spring or this winter, I called a guy who runs a recruiting service, and I'm like, hey, tell me about this kid, particular kid. He's like, oh, he's an A-10 player. He can do this, he can do that. But I would never have anticipated that you'd be calling me about him. I'm like, well, why? And he just talked about, not to trash anyone. I'm not so sure that you're going to, character issues and things like that. And I thought that was a good sign that, okay, who we're about, what we're about.
So you feel like your brand is making its way into the...
I think it's slowly, Yeah. And I think, we had some situations that didn't turn out great. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of those were, attributable to... in the very, very short period of time, we had to recruit 10 guys. We inherited a roster where if we didn't bring guys in, we wouldn't field a roster for those first couple years. And I think we are continuing to gain traction so that we can get slightly more talented players who still have the requisite, character and things like that. But I am big. Guys who come from winning programs, they know what it means to sacrifice. Mm-hmm. They know what it means to prepare. They know what it means to play in big games. You mentioned the 10-1 record in close games. I think that's important. So we've got right now six guys that will be on next year's team that won state championships. And then a number of others, you know, like Justin Carr didn't win one, but, you know, got to the semifinals. We got a number of other that, were, you know, came, you know, very close. Jamal Hartwell, who we just signed, you know, got in the Final Four of the open division of the CIF.
It's a great league,
you know,
yeah.
So, you know, I think that's good. You know, we're you know, possibly, who knows, we might maybe strike lightning and get one more, you know. But I think that's important. The other thing that I want, you know, the game of basketball is going to versatility. It's always been that way. So in addition to guys who've got a winning pedigree and have the right culture in terms of work ethic, you know, guys who are versatile, you know, I think that's important. But we are very much, we're very, very transparent in the recruiting process. We're a developmentally based program. Nobody's going to spend more time one-on-one with players than our staff, trying to help them off the court, you know, become the type of young men you want, but then on the court. Like, we're going to take 30 minutes every single day before or after practice working with each player. That's how you get better.
Yeah.
You know, and I think if you looked at the end of the year, where we played much better in the end of the year with a very young team, it wasn't that we put in three new plays. It was guys were better able to execute.
Right. They were better at the end of the year than they were at the beginning of the year.
Yeah. And that's what you want.
No. Right. And I want to ask you about transfers. Transfers were generally something that you stayed away from at Bucknell. I think you had one transfer into Bucknell in your time there. You know, you had Jared Reuter come in from Virginia. That might kind of seem like an exception, except Mason has been linked to other transfers in the recruiting market as well at the moment. And I know, not asking to discuss anyone specifically, but I'm wondering, are we going to see more transfers into Mason in the coming years? And if so, is that a reaction to the changing landscape of college basketball where there's just this glut of transfers on the market every year?
I would say a definite maybe.
Okay.
you know what? And I'm not trying to be flip.
Right.
We didn't have anyone transfer out of Bucknell ever, you know, in the 7 years I was there. So therefore, you weren't taking transfers in. And Bucknell was a unique place where it was very hard for a person to stay for a fifth year. Like, they had a regulation, like, you had to graduate in eight semesters.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's one grad program. So that was unique. You know, I think we look at every recruiting situation, whether it be a high school player or a transfer, on its own merits. You know, and I went down and met with Jared Reuter, you know, a day or two days after, you know, he kind of hit the transfer wires, and I sat with him for 3 hours, and I'm like, I want to coach this kid. Like, this kid is awesome, and I hope he's pretty good. You know, I watched all his clips, you know, at Virginia, and I'm like, okay, this kid's going to be good. I know that. But then when I talk with him, I'm like, all right, I want this person in our program.
Right.
And so that's going to be the same evaluation tool. There are a glut of transfers. I think it's regrettable. We inquire, you know, we're looking always to find ways to improve our program. We'll explore, you know, and I would say that probably, you know, half the people that we're linked to, whether they're be in high school or transfers, are probably accurate, and at least half are inaccurate. So I don't think you can, you know, believe all that you see out there in the social media world.
Right. Okay. So I guess next question I have is, how much does length of eligibility factor into that equation? Because a guy like Reuter, is it Reuter or Reuter? You said Reuter.
Reuter.
It is Reuter. Oh, yeah. I feel like an idiot. I've been saying Reuter for 2 years now.
That's all right. I just call him Jared.
All right, that's probably easier. But a guy like Reuter is going to be in his third year in the program when he's a senior. And one of the other things that seems like it's a lot more prevalent nowadays are grad transfers, guys who graduate with a year of eligibility that can go play right away. And I think on the whole, they've been a little bit less impactful than I think players and fans might have expected them to be. And do you think that that might be related to the fact that they really only have one off season to acclimate to a new program and acclimate to their new teammates? And is that something that's going to factor into your decisions chasing those sorts of players going forward?
Well, you know, again, some fifth-year grad transfers have been really impactful at places. They've really helped teams. They've really helped stabilize programs. you know, and I'm not saying we would never do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what we want to do, what we've tried to do, is build a program that's built to last. We don't want to have a team, you know, a one-year team. We want to have a program. And I think we're gaining some traction in that regard. So one of the big things that we've looked at and we've explored and considered grad transfers is, are they going to stunt the development of some of the other guys that, you know, have committed to us, who bought in, who fit our culture, and who we believe, you know, can really help us. You know, if we had known the degree to which some of the circumstances that happened this year at our center spot, would we have a year ago entertained the notion of a fifth-year grad transfer? You know, we might have at that particular spot where there wasn't a glut of personnel. We
right.
looked at a couple, but character didn't match. The flip side of it is a kid like Greg Klext got so much better because he played so much.
He had to. He had to get those minutes.
He had to. And yeah. so, you know, he's going to end up being a better player
mm-hmm.
in the long run than he would have if he had played four
right.
or 6 or 8 minutes a game. So it's a balancing act that, you know, recruiting's more art than science, and, you know, we don't always get it right. But I think the biggest thing that we always try to do is say, what impact will this have on key guys in our program now? And if we find that it's going to be a negative impact, we tend to stay away from bringing, you know, that extra person in.
Mm-hmm. Brad Edwards said something that I thought was really interesting in an interview recently. I think it was with collegeAD.com. But he said that he's trying to avoid an arms race with other teams in the league. And I'm not sure if you've heard him use that sort of terminology before. But his point wasn't that Mason isn't going to do everything they can to keep up. It just seems like a little bit more of a money ball approach. Mason's going to look to find value and to find advantages in places where other teams aren't necessarily looking. I'm curious sort of what that means to you. How, if at all, does that translate to what the coaching staff is doing on a daily basis, what the players are doing each day? Does that come back to the fact that you think this can be a player development program? You can take players and develop them better than other programs can?
Well, again, I don't know, and I hadn't heard that interview, and so I'm not exactly positive what he's referring to. And yeah, we like to think we can be a player development program, but, you know, we certainly don't claim we're better than anyone else. But it's a focus for us. What I would say is, you know, since I've been here, Brad and Dr. Cabrera, you know, have done what they've said they're going to do, and we have progressively, invested in our program. And we're not, you know, we're not where the rest of the league is. We're probably, you know, somewhat below the average in terms of spending. But part of it is, you know, you had to build a base up.
Right.
You can't go from 0 to 60 in 3 seconds. And so they've done that. You know, I think that the being able to get a dedicated practice facility has been a game changer.
Have you seen returns from the practice facility in the recruiting game so far?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think the most important thing, okay, the most important thing we do is work with the kids who are here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I think sometimes programs get it all mixed up. They're always looking for the next guy. Now, you always have to be recruiting. But if the guys we get are good enough and they get better and they buy in and they have the right attitude, then we're going to have a chance to be okay. And so most importantly, if I, you know, I said, Brad, okay, I want to recruit gym rats. I want to recruit guys who want to be in the gym. We can't put them in a gym except for 2.5 hours of practice. There's a problem here.
Right.
And they recognize that. And so now more than anything, we talked to our guys about being gym rats. Well, now there's an opportunity for them and a place to continue to work on their game. You know, so that's a game changer with our guys and helping to promote the values of our culture. But it is, if I want to recruit a guy and say, hey, we're going to be the best player development program in the country, you can come here, be around other gym rats, and you bring them in and like, there's really no place for you to work out. That made it hard. So I think I think that's good. Now, so we'd like to add some more bells and whistles to that practice facility. It's a pretty bare, you know, walls, and I think that's going to happen. You know, we're going to undertake that. You guys can see right there, like the mock-ups for what we're going to do.
The locker room changes, yeah.
Again, most immediately for me, most pressing for me is a film room where we can watch film with our guys.
So what does watching film look like right now?
So watching film is we take these chairs that we keep in the second bathroom that were built sometime around the Great Depression, and then we have a projector, and we got to tell, you know, like the bigger guys sit on the outside so you're not in the way of the projector, and it's fine.
Yeah.
Okay, but it's not great, and so what we want is we want to be as efficient, we want to be as effective, we want to be as progressive as we can in our teaching. The film room will give us that opportunity.
And that rendering just looks really cool. And if I'm a player, I want to go somewhere like that, right?
The ancillary benefit, and let's be honest, is everything we do is with the mission to enhance what we're doing with our current players, okay, and to be more attractive to the next generation of Mesa players. This, in the existing space, you know, I think could be a game changer. You know, so I think one of the things that, you know, you're always going to find the benefits in recruiting are 2-3 years down the road. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a relationship driven business. So I think we're recruiting progressively better as we've made connections, as people have gotten to know myself, our staff, we're out, we're visible, you know, I think we're accessible. Now having a practice, I think, will help us. I think when this has actually come to fruition, that will help us. And so we always just want to continually improve, you know, what we're doing. And so, you know, my goal is that this helps us and so that we get our program to a place where we're a perennial NCAA tournament team. And once you're a perennial NCAA tournament team, now you have a chance to, you know, to get the right bounce, the right break, the right matchup, and make a run.
Right. But
before you can do that, you got to be a perennial NCAA tournament team. I think the improvements we've made on the court, the improvements we've made in recruiting, and the enhancements that the university's made will give us a chance to be that, hopefully next year.
And that's a great segue into the next year talk. And I think the fan base is getting a little bit antsy. Haven't been to the tournament since 2011. You are heading into year four, and this is year two of the 2-year season that you started talking about last year. How are you going to define whether or not the upcoming season is a success?
Well, the first thing I'd say is like the thing that makes this job so great is the fan base. You know, like we love it. We appreciate it.
UBA is pretty awesome when it's a full
when
crowd,
you get
right?
A good, when you get a good crowd in here, and one of the Saturday games that we had, you know, second semester, and you get the band and the student body, and this is a pretty great place to play, and we don't take for granted at all like the level of passion and support that the fan base has. So that's really important. At the same time, you know, the biggest thing that we tell our guys is you got to block out all the noise, and you got to mm-hmm. block out everything else, and you got to embrace the process. Like, make today's workout this afternoon the best workout you've ever had. Make the practice on November 1st the best practice. Make the game on November, whatever, or December the best, you know, the film session. Because if you spend so much time worrying about external factors and external judgments on success, you're going to get messed up, you know, and so that's important. So, you know, we really stress to our guys that you got to block out the noise when, you know, we lost a couple of games in pretty decisive fashion in December.
Mm-hmm.
you got to block it out. And everyone matters. And at the end of the day, nobody matters except for the guys sitting next to you in the locker room and the guys that are on the court with you. You know, there might be a little different kind of noise where they'll, you know, probably for the first time this season, some expectations that, hey, we got a chance to be pretty good. And I'm not going to back away from that. I think we got a chance to be pretty good. But you got to block that out as well.
Right. And it seems like the A-10's kind of opening up right now, too. I think Richmond was supposed to look good. They've had a couple defections. I think the picture of who's going to be the best team in the A-10 next year looks kind of unclear. And I think a lot of people think it's between, you know, I think St. Joe's, St. Louis, and Mason. So I think there are some expectations heading into the season.
Yeah, and I think that's great. But again, you know, to me, when you judge a successful season, say, did we come as close as we could have come to reaching our potential? Now, I think our potential in this upcoming season is the highest that it's been since I've been here. You know, and so that you know, that level of excellence is higher.
Yeah.
Now the other side of it, you know, we've kind of, nobody had many expectations for us, so it was, you know, was, you know, now we're gonna get everyone's best shot. So learning how to manage that, it's a different set of expectations, it's a different mindset that we have to cultivate within our team, and that'll be the challenge. How do we respond to that?
Yeah, now in that same vein, I know we can't talk about specific games that might happen on the schedule, but schedule shaping up to look pretty good. We're in the Emerald Coast Classic, which is a great field. I think Baylor, Cincinnati, Ole Miss are going to be in that. Are you trying to put together a schedule that's going to be at-large worthy in the ATA Conference?
Yeah, we're trying to do the best we can with that. You know, I think we've got, I think, you know, again, the we're close to being done, I think. Some of these games, you know, have been set, you know, ongoing scheduling relationships or things like that. So you do the best you can to do it. I think one of the things that, again, you know, continuing to invest in our program is financially to be able, you know, down the road as we continue to get better, to invest in being able to bring in more you know, RPI worthy teams to play here. So I think as always the balance is, okay, let's play Power 5 teams. So we'll play three Power 5 teams next year. Okay, two in the neutral site, one on the road, you know.
All opportunities for good wins. Yeah.
You know, one was in the Elite Eight
right
last year. So, like, it's, you know, we've tried that. We'll have two road games that are return games of teams that are, you know, I think would be what they call either quadrant two or quadrant three games, you know, based on the new quad system. And you're trying to also continue historical relationships, you know, with games that are good for our fan base, and then having home games. So that juggling act, you know, is kind of a two-year process. And again, yeah, we'd like to do that, to have an at-large resume, if you will. I think the best way still to have an at-large resume is to really, you know, do really, really well in league play.
Right.
You know, just have a really good record, win at a high level in league play. The reality that the landscape of the world is that, you know, I mean, it was shocking to see St. Bonaventure sent to the first four.
Yep.
You know, two years on the heels of them being snubbed in the worst snubbing for an at-large berth, you know, in my coaching history. You know, 2 years ago when they had a 30 RPI and they were left out. So, to some degree, again, you can control what you can control. If St. Bonaventure was in danger of being, you know, snubbed, they were one of the last four teams in the tournament. That's ludicrous to me. So, you know, again, a team like Loyola would have had no chance of getting an at-large bid and obviously go to the Final Four. So to some degree, you know, we do what we can do that we can control, and then we got to play as well as we can play.
Right. And do you try to overcompensate a little bit in the scheduling, given that St. Bonaventure did have a really good out-of-conference schedule? But I think they beat Syracuse and they beat Maryland. Syracuse and Maryland, I think, both ended up being a little bit underwhelming compared to their preseason expectations. How much can you do to account for that or control for that when you're building your schedule?
Well, it's hard.
Yeah.
Because, like, you, again,
probably nothing, right?
Bonnie's example, Maryland and Syracuse were like marquee wins that turned out not to be marquee wins.
Yeah.
You know, like last year, we scheduled Louisville. Well, we didn't know that they'd be embroiled in the biggest college basketball scandal in the history.
Right.
You don't know. And a lot of the games, and so for us too, a lot of these games are, it's 2 years in the making.
Mm-hmm.
Because we also have an added challenge. You know, we can't schedule a home game on just any given night. So we have to, you know, we have a few more processes to go through than at another school because of the acts that come to Eagle Bank, that are coming here.
Right.
So, yeah, this is great. We can play that game. Now we've got whoever performing, you know, the arena's blocked off those 2 days. So, again, we have a good working relationship with all the people that work here. But it's not like, you know, I think a lot of people, oh, now that you guys are going to be good, you got to go change how you schedule for next year. No, we have to change how we schedule for 2019-2020. We're engaged in heavy discussions as to what our schedule looks like in 2019-2020 and beyond.
Yeah. I know we got to wrap up in a couple minutes. Before we do that, I want to talk about the recruits that we've got coming in. I think it's a really exciting recruiting class. I can't stop watching tape of Jason Douglas Stanley. He's a wonderfully polished scorer already. Jordan Miller was All-Met. You got to be a player to make All-Met team, right? Big commitment from Jamal Hartwell, who looks like an Otis clone. And then, of course, Jared Reuter is expected to be an impact player, I think, by a pretty large part of the fan base here. Talk to me about those guys and what you're hoping to see out of them in this coming season.
Yeah, we're really excited about those guys. Obviously, Jared, we've had a chance to work with every single day. And again, he's got great work ethic. He's got great character. Like, he's a fun kid to coach. He's also pretty talented. He's got to stay healthy. He's got to stay humble. All the ifs. But he'll have a chance to be one of the best players in the league. You know, I think that's and we're not shying away.
That's a bold prediction.
Yeah. I think he's really good. I think he can score around the basket. I mean, I know he can. Mm-hmm. He can score around the basket. He can score at the mid-range. He can shoot threes. You know, he's got to get in a little better shape. He's got to become an elite rebounder. We just talked after he has his workout. Like, are you an elite rebounder or are you a good rebounder? You know, he's got to stay out of foul trouble. All the ifs. But he's got a chance to be one of the five best players in the league. I believe that. You know, and that's a good place to start. And then the three incoming freshmen will all go through their learning curves and their struggles to adapt to the physicality of the game. The attention to detail on the defensive end is always a shocker for them. You know, we always say, okay, what does it take to play as a freshman? Well, one, you got to learn how to bring it every single day, which most guys don't have to do in high school. Then you got to be able to defend.
Yep.
Okay? And then you got to be able to take care of the ball, or vice versa, depending, like a Jamal Hartwell as a primary ball handler. But I think all those three guys have great potential, and they're different. You know, so Jamal Hartwell is a pure point guard. He's a pass-first point guard, but he can score. He shoots the ball very well, which was important to me to bring in shooting, because I think, you know, Jared stands the potential of being double-teamed. Mm-hmm. So you want to have guys that you can kick to knock down the shot.
And that was a pain point for a lot of this season.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And then I think Jason Douglas Stanley is a flat-out scorer, and he can shoot from deep, you know, and not just a shooter though. I mean, I think he can do a variety of things. And then Jordan Miller, you know, is, I'll tell you one thing. I mean, Jordan's a scorer. He's got good size. He's athletic. Jordan's an excellent passer. So the thing about all three of those guys is, like, it's not just about them scoring, that they can pass, they can facilitate.
Right. What do you have? Let's talk about the returning freshmen real quick. The guys coming back from last year. What do you have Javon, AJ, Greg, and Gonar working on over the summer?
Well, again, so those four guys in particular have had great springs. So we're allowed to work on them 2 hours a week with a ball outside, you know, so that we do 3 days a week for 40 minutes. And the vast majority of those days are one-on-one with a coach and just working on what Javon needs to work on, which is different than what Gonar and Greg and AJ. They've all matured a ton. I think Javon, you know, at the end of the year, Javon was playing some really good basketball. You know, and I talk with him, like, I thought he would have performed early in the year like he did at the end of the year. It just took him longer.
Yeah.
That's okay. The question isn't if, it's when, you know.
Yeah, Javon's exciting because he does a lot of things at a high level already. If you just look at his shooting stats, his shot wasn't falling for a lot of the season, but he's in that same sort of big physical guard mold as sort of Marquise Moore. He rebounds really well. You trusted him on Lawan Pipkins down the stretch at the end of the A-10 tournament. So I'm pretty excited to see what we're going to get out of him
and
next year.
And he can really shoot the ball well. We chart everything in practice. He shoots the ball exceptionally well in practice, and he early in the year relied too much on that. He can drive it.
Yep.
He can rebound. He also has the potential to be an elite defender, which he did not acknowledge. And we kind of force fed it, and he did a great job. As you said, on Pip, because he's got some length.
Mm-hmm.
And his body, he's got a body that can pop.
Yep.
And our guy Handy Hanrahan is as good as there is. So excited about him. I don't know if we had time to get into the other guys or we're running out of time.
I've got about 6 hours more questions I could ask, but I think we're going to have to save those for another time.
Okay.
So to wrap it up, just what are your expectations coming into next season?
You know, my expectations, again, it's trite, it's a cliche, but I believe it. Like, let's be as good as we can be. And we're not going to define it on wins and losses. But we, you know, this will be the first roster that we've had since I've been here. We're going to say, okay, I think, you know, we've got enough depth. We've got enough size. We've got enough experience that you can say, you know what? We've got enough. And now...
Enough to compete and enough to win the A-10, potentially.
To be at the highest level of the A-10.
Yeah.
And so now it's, okay, now does it all blend?
Mm-hmm.
Does it all work together? The guys, you know, every guy who played a lot this year is going to have to be willing to accept a slightly smaller individual role for the overall good. So that's a different challenge. You know, every guy here, like, they played as many minutes as they could stand because we didn't have, you know, guys to come in. So now, can you sacrifice? That's a different challenge. And it's one that we're addressing and attacking, you know, since we got back on campus after spring break.
Wonderful. Well, Coach, we really appreciate the time. Hope to have you on again soon.
All right. Thank you. Dave Paulson, head basketball coach at George Mason University. It's been fun to work together with By George. I think their passion for Mason basketball is outstanding, and they're a constant presence at practices, games, at home, on the road. A great follow for all of you fans.